Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 497. I'm Amy Matheny, and I am so thrilled to be with you in this week where we have our last week of November and head over into the month of December. And so many wonderful things going on during this holiday season. I mean, I'm donning my gay apparel as we speak, seriously. Like, the Christmas lights and the tree is going up and starting to plan fun events and outings and places to be in the weeks ahead as we barrel into the end of the year. It's so crazy. We're like 5 weeks away to 2013. This year has flown by, and I'm just so grateful to be here and together with all of you. You know, this is a time of year when I like to be out all the time. I like to be out at restaurants and at bars and at theater and at music events and gathering with friends. And, you know, and if you're feeling lonely during this holiday season, because we definitely can get blue during the holidays, there's so many ways. Just if you have just enough courage and just enough gumption to head out on your own, to strike out on your own and just let the universe get in the way, you never know what can happen to your life and just what kind of night you may have or what kind of day you could have. So I definitely encourage you to go out. If money's tight, there's lots of wonderful options of things to do, whether it's ice skating downtown or just walking around and looking at the holiday lights or popping into a bar for a drink, or maybe going and catching a movie or catching a night of theater if that's something you can do. You know, the Chicago Gay Men's Chorus is celebrating a big anniversary this year with their concert, and I am definitely going to be attending their big concert here next week, which I can't wait, as they celebrate, you know, a few decades of performing together as a group. And that's just such a wonderful thing to do, where you can meet people and you can be comfortable and you can be in an LGBT environment. Also at Steppenwolf Theater, About Face Theater is performing a show that looks to be, it's a world premiere, so I haven't seen it yet, but looks to be raucous good fun with our very own co-host Scott Duff, called We Three Lizas. And hey, you know that there are going to be some homosexuals hanging out there. From what I hear, you can hang out in the lounge a little bit before and they let you know when the show starts. Then you head in and you do the show. So great place to meet people or go on a date night. And really great and affordable thing to do starting this week, and I know that I would love it if you attended, and so would our boss Tracy Baim and our movie critic Richard Knight Jr. and our very own Scott Duff as co-host as well. The premiere of Scrooge and Marley is happening. The film that was shot here, the gay modern retelling of the Christmas Carol, is going to be performed at the Music Box Theater in Chicago, and the red carpet and the big premiere is this Thursday, November 29th. And I will be there. But then there are shows Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, there's some actor talkbacks on Saturday and Sunday when they have matinee shows. There's afternoon shows. There's afternoon shows Friday through Monday. So if you have a weekend, you can go through Tuesday, you can go and see an afternoon matinee. If you don't work 9 to 5 on Monday and Tuesday, you can do that. Or if you do, you can go during the weekend. And the next Wednesday evening, there's a 7:30 show as well. So there's so many great options to see it. You can go to ScroogeandMarleyMovie.com. You know, it's a $10, $12 movie. A matinee is probably cheaper. So that's a very affordable thing to do this week. And one of my shows that I tell everybody, run, don't walk to see this show. You would not think of it as a holiday show, but it is definitely a play that speaks to the spirit and hope and the willpower of just the human spirit. And that's kind of, to me, what the holidays are about. In some ways, just the will to get through, and also our humanity is just kind of what Thanksgiving and the holidays are all about for me, and the new year, that there's a new lease on life, new hope as we turn into January. So the play is called Wasteland. It's at Timeline Theater, where I performed Enron last year, and I loved working with this company, and it's right in the heart of our gayborhood in Boys Town here in Chicago at Wellington and Broadway. Very intimate theater experience, and this is such a powerful show. Funny and moving, not at all what you expect, called Wasteland, a Timeline Theater, and the director, openly gay actor, director, writer, William Brown, is on the show with me today to talk about his full career. You know, he's played Scrooge in The Christmas Carol at the Goodman Theater. He wrote and directed the fabulous Julia Child piece called To Master the Art, also at Timeline, and the gorgeous A Little Night Music, which was this past summer he directed. And now he is directing Wasteland. And so if you go to theater in Chicago, you know Bill Brown. And I'm so thrilled to have him on the Queercast today. Also, what's going on in the GLBT news and theater elsewhere around the fair city, and much, much more. So it's a big show. I can't wait to talk to Bill. Stay with me.
Vancouver is home to Western Canada's largest LGBT population, and now you can enter for your chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction prize package to Vancouver, British Columbia. A safe and welcoming destination for diehard shoppers, avid outdoor thrill seekers, nightlife aficionados, and dedicated food lovers, Vancouver is a world-class city offering something for everyone. From sports pubs to drag shows, leather bars to dance clubs, lounges and restaurants, Vancouver's got it all. Plus, Vancouver Pride celebrations and the Vancouver Queer Film Festival in July and August, and Whistler's Winter Pride in February. Tourism Vancouver is pleased to offer you and a guest the chance to win a trip to Vancouver in 2013. For a chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction sweepstakes, visit tourismvancouver.com/lights by November 30th, 2012 to enter. That's tourismvancouver.com/lights.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
The U.S. Supreme Court indicated that it has rescheduled the date when it will consider whether to grant review in Hollingsworth versus Perry, formerly Perry versus Brown, the federal constitution challenge to California's Prop 8. The Perry case, along with several cases challenging the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, have been distributed for consideration at the justices' private conference scheduled for Friday, November 30th. The Proposition 8 and DOMA cases had previously been distributed for the conference on Tuesday, November 20th.
Corporate giant Prudential Financial, Inc. released an online survey of more than 1,400 LGBT people. When asked to rank the industry's attention to their financial needs, with 0 being poor and 10 being excellent, 63% of respondents gave financial institutions a score of 4 or less. Findings indicate this is a missed opportunity for the industry, since the LGBT community is seen as having a higher median household income than the general population, $61,000 versus $50,000.
In Oregon, State Representative Tina Kotek will become the first out lesbian to lead a state legislative chamber after being elected by her colleagues as House Speaker. Openly gay leaders will control legislative chambers in 5 states, an increase of 3 before the November 6 elections.
In San Francisco, the iconic gay bar Twin Peaks Tavern is set to become an official city landmark. In 1972, Twin Peaks Tavern became the first gay bar in the country to feature transparent floor-to-ceiling windows, revealing the patrons inside, a risky decision at that time.
Number cruncher Nate Silver has made a splash ever since, predicting with uncanny accuracy how President Obama would defeat Mitt Romney. Silver, who is openly gay, predicted with 90.9% certainty that Obama would win the election months before it happened. And he also correctly predicted the Electoral College results in 50 out of 50 states.
Jonathan Maynard, a gay Chicago police officer, has been fired after the Chicago Police Board determined that he worked as a bouncer at Hydrate Nightclub and participated in a lewd wrestling event while on convalescent duty. According to the findings published by the board, Maynard participated in a lewd wrestling event in November 2007, violating his convalescent duty restrictions. Those findings further state that he was paid to work as a bouncer at Hydrate twice in the summer of 2008. Also while on medical roll.
The Transgender Day of Remembrance officially took place November 20th. It was established in 1999 to memorialize Rita Hester, a trans woman brutally murdered in 1998. Her murder remains unsolved, as do most crimes committed against trans people.
In New York State, a Syracuse Common Council okayed a bill 7-1 to amend the existing Syracuse Fair Practices Law, which passed in 1990 to outlaw discrimination based on sexual orientation, to include gender identity and expression. The measure expands the local civil rights law to protect transgender and gender nonconforming residents from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations, such as restaurants, hotels, and stores.
In Michigan, Royal Oak City Commission unanimously voted to approve drafting of an ordinance that would ban discrimination based on sexual orientation. However, even if the commission adopts such an ordinance, opponents could force a public vote by gathering petition signatures.
In world news, Nigeria's assembly is weighing a bill that would ultimately jail gay citizens and anyone who supported them. The bill would make it a crime for gays and lesbians to get married, to witness a gay marriage, or for affirming churches to perform same-sex weddings. Gays and lesbians who marry would face 14 years in prison. Gay rights groups have called upon Nigeria President Goodluck Jonathan to veto the bill should it pass its final reading.
In Britain, Jamie Hensley, a member of the boy band Union J, which competed on that country's X Factor show, has come out. The 22-year-old who lives in Luton with his mother has been in a relationship with his boyfriend, who's 21, for 3 years.
Tony Briffa, the first openly intersex mayor in Australia, is stepping down despite being re-elected to the Hobsons Bay City Council in the western suburbs of Melbourne. Briffa will continue to serve the Hobsons Bay community as a city council member.
London Mayor Boris Johnson supported England's first ever national HIV testing week. HIV and sexual health charity, the Terence Higgins Trust, which recently marked its 30th anniversary, launched the campaign to encourage gay and bisexual men to test more regularly for the virus. The week ran November 23rd through the 30th.
In Cuba, Adela Hernandez, 48, has made history by becoming the first known transgender person to hold public office. Hernandez recently won election as a delegate to the municipal government for a central province of Villa Clara.
A BBC documentary follows the life of Jackie Green, age 19, who made history once again by becoming the first transgender Miss England finalist. At 16, Green made history by becoming the youngest person in the world to undergo gender reassignment surgery. The documentary is called Transsexual Teen Beauty Queen.
In entertainment news, CBS has canceled Partners, the sitcom that paired Michael Urie and David Krumholtz as best friends who are straight and gay. Partners failed to hold the audience from the comedy How I Met Your Mother and blunted the growth of Two Broke Girls, which followed.
Las Vegas's Bellagio Gallery of Fine Art will present Warhol Out West starting February 8th of 2013. Organized in partnership with the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, this exhibition will focus on Warhol's depictions of all things Western. Warhol Out West will showcase 59 of the iconic artist's works, including paintings, sculptures, photographs, screen prints, and wallpaper.
Florence Welch, the lead singer of the British band Florence and the Machine, is planning to write a new stage musical. Welch will collaborate with her longtime friend, costume designer Sophie Hart Walsh.
And there will not be a third season of Boss, which stars Kelsey Grammer and films in Chicago. However, there are discussions between Starz and Lionsgate TV about possibly doing a two-hour movie that would wrap up the story of Chicago Mayor Kane.
In St. Petersburg, Russia, a court dismissed a lawsuit that sought millions of dollars in damages from Madonna for allegedly traumatizing minors when she spoke up for gay rights during a concert. The ruling came after a one-day hearing during which plaintiffs claimed that Madonna's so-called propaganda of perversion would negatively affect Russia's birth rate and erode the nation's defense capability. Ultimately, the Moscowski District Court in St. Petersburg threw out the Trade Union of Russian Citizens lawsuit.
Matthew McConaughey has been making news for his weight loss for the film The Dallas Buyers Club, but Jared Leto is also in the film as Rayon, a crossdresser who is battling AIDS and helps McConaughey's character smuggle drugs from Mexico. The indie film, which is based on a true story, also stars Jennifer Garner.
Golden Age gay actor Johnny Arthur finally received a tombstone more than 60 years after his death. Before the Hays Code, which prohibited even implicit depictions of homosexuality, Arthur was well known for over-the-top roles in movies like The Desert Song, Going Wild, and The Monster. The Motion Picture and Television Fund covered the cost of Arthur's funeral. However, his grave went without a marker for more than six decades until Scott Michaels of Dearly Departed Tours started a successful fundraising campaign for a proper headstone.
And through December 16th, Paolo Andino of the Big Gay Sketch Show will star in the Santaland Diaries at Los Angeles Stella Adler Theater. Santaland is the one-man play from David Sedaris about the author's firsthand experiences as an unemployed writer taking a job as an elf at Macy's. Of course, in Chicago, our very own Windy City Queercast co-host Mitchell Fain headlines at Theater Wit, running now through December 30th.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 26th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. This holiday season, About-Face Theater takes over the Steppenwolf Garage for the world premiere musical We Three Lizas. This is one holiday bender you'll want to remember. Doors open to Liza's Lounge at 7 p.m. on show nights, 3 p.m. on matinees for cocktails and crooners. We Three Lizas starts when Liza is getting ready. A perfect holiday outing for friends, We Three Lizas runs November 30th through December 23rd. For tickets, visit aboutfacetheater.com.
At the Flash, won Pride Films and Plays Great Play Contest this year and now is running in a full production through December 16th at the Center on Halsted's Hoover Leppin Theater. At the Flash is a fierce and funny play that condenses 50 years of LGBT history into a fascinating and thought-provoking one-man play. Visit PrideFilmsAndPlays.com. Don't miss At the Flash, a Pride Films and Plays production at Center on Halsted.
The holiday classic returns, now in its 36th year. Black Ensemble Theater presents Jackie Taylor's The Other Cinderella, playing now through January 13th at Black Ensemble Theater, 4450 North Clark Street. Everyone is welcome in the Kingdom of Other, so visit blackensembletheater.org and order your tickets today for The Other Cinderella. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Beloved Chicago theater artist, a Jeff Award-winning actor, prolific director, creator of new work. Whether you have smelled the fragrant French food as you sat in the audience of To Master the Art about the life of Julia Child, which he co-wrote and directed, or you've delighted in his delicious and curmudgeoned portrayal of Ebenezer Scrooge at the Goodman Theater's Christmas Carol, chances are, if you go to theater in Chicago, Bill Brown has been a part of your experience. Currently, Bill directed a compelling world premiere at Timeline Theater called Wasteland, and I am just thrilled to have him on the podcast to talk about his rich career in Chicago theater. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hello. How are you? I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, full disclosure, you've directed me in a play. It's been...
Yes, indeed.
It's been a long time ago.
And I'm a huge fan of yours, too.
Aw, well, thank you. But you really... You've staked some flags in this town and city, and let's talk about that. Let's go back to the beginning, though, because we actually have a connection of being Southern folk at the beginning. Where are you from, and how did you end up in Chicago?
Well, Southern's just a little inaccurate. I grew up in West Virginia, which is not really the South.
Okay.
It's its own identity.
It's
but
true.
Both my parents were Southern and came from big Southern families, and I was raised in a Southern tradition.
Yeah.
North Carolina and Virginia is where they were from, respectively.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time in North Carolina and think of it as one of my homes.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
how
yeah,
did,
I mean, you're right. There is a Southern sensibility that is hard to explain, but yeah, we share that.
True. We find one another as Southern
I think we do.
People.
Yeah.
And how did you end up in Chicago?
Whim.
When and how? Yeah. Don't tell me when. You don't have to tell me. It's not that long ago.
But how did you end up here? I moved from West Virginia. Did my undergraduate there and got the first bus to New York and lived there for 3 years. And then I went to grad school at ACT in San Francisco, lived there for 2 years, and literally thought, well, I don't want to stay here. I'm afraid I'll get in New York. I'll get lost in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick Chicago. And that's about as much thought as I put into it.
Yeah.
But I found a home that... I mean, nowhere else could I have the career I've had.
Yeah.
Nowhere else could I do the breadth of plays as an actor and a director and work with the people I've worked with consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere else, I think, could I do what I want to do with the people I want to do it with.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty grateful.
Well, and you have had, you've been on so many stages, we should say, throughout the Midwest even. I mean, not just Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to kind of focus on Chicago, even though we have listeners who may have seen you in Wisconsin or Montana or mm-hmm. work that you've done all over. But you have many theatrical homes right here in this city. Let's talk about Writers Theater, because we've had a great relationship with Writers Theater through the newspaper and the Windy City Times Theater series and through the podcast. You've directed many shows there, and you've acted in quite a lot as well. What has it meant to have, you know, the Chicago home that you have that you were just touching mm-hmm. on, and also to have Writers mm-hmm. Theater that hasn't pegged you, you know, has seen you as, seen all the Renaissance sides of who you are as an artist?
God love you for that. And that is exactly the kind of home that Writers has given me. Writers really, you know, was one of the first places, although you and I were there for the very first, but
yes.
It was one of the first professional theaters to hire me on in any kind of long-term basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that job by a combination of blackmail and extortion. I'd been working as an actor in Chicago for like 15 years or so.
Yeah.
But it's very funny. I mean, people that are perfectly happy to hire you as an actor aren't prepared to make the leap to hire you as a director.
Right.
And Michael called me when Writers Theater was barely a blip, was this theater in the back of a bookstore in Glencoe, Illinois, and said, "I'd love you to come out and do play Elliot in Private Lives."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, what the heck am I going to do out there?
Mm-hmm.
Not imagining what a hugely successful enterprise Writers Theater has become. But I said, "Well, what else are you doing?" And he said, "Glass Menagerie." And I said, "Do you have a director?" "Not really." "Okay, mm-hmm. I'll come and be in your play mm-hmm. if you'll hire me as a director for Glass Menagerie." And we've been working together ever since.
Well, now, many people may know your just gripping portrayal of Kissinger in Nixon's Nixon, where you won a Jeff Award for actor in a principal role or a leading role. How do you approach as an actor? It's a question that I find interesting, because different people do it differently. When it's someone who's real, someone historical, or people may have an impression of, it's not a fictional character, how do you approach something like that? And obviously you hit the nail on the head with this one.
I have an active imagination.
Mm.
And, you know, objectively, I'm not the biggest fan of Henry Kissinger. But as I started to, I mean, and I read just about everything there is about him.
Okay.
I was fascinated by who he was, how he got there, the struggles of his life. And you certainly, you simply can't play a character that you don't love.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to.
Yeah.
And that play itself was a play about Kissinger and Nixon reimagining themselves as other world leaders. So you know, if your imagination is strong enough, you can actually believe you're Henry Kissinger or Mao Zedong at one point in the play. I thrilled to the challenge of that.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm taller than Henry Kissinger, but there are ways that we are similar looking.
Mm-hmm.
I could mimic his voice, certain physical things I could, you know, handle. But finding the soul of the man was it was just a thrilling exercise.
Mm.
Because that's not always evident when you read about a historical person.
Right, right. Now, this summer you directed for them just a sumptuous production of A Little Night Music with our good friends Deanna Dunnigan and Shannon Cochran, and
right.
a stellar cast to boot. Have you had lots of experiences with musicals, and where is Stephen Sondheim on that list of writers that you want to work with?
I was a musician long before I was an actor. I mean, I started with piano when I was 7 years old, and studied voice. And in fact, my undergraduate degree is in music, is in mm-hmm. applied voice. And I moved to New York to become an opera singer. So I've always, and I still think musically. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I really get to know a cast well, I'm not afraid to give them a musical note.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That,
yes.
That I hear a play in terms of the variety of music that it might produce. And but having said that, I haven't done that many musicals.
Yeah.
I absolutely love doing them. It just hasn't presented itself. I mean, I would love to direct an opera someday, but,
did it whet your appetite for wanting to do more musical theater?
Absolutely. Bring it on.
And if so, who are the composers? I mean, are you a Lerner Lowe, a Cole Porter, a Stephen Sondheim? Or, as you said, I mean, you might be going into wanting, I want to do, an operetta
or
go hardcore in Verdi and Puccini. I mean, what would be exciting for you? All of it?
I have to say, you know, it's hard to be a person in theater my age and not be an enormous fan of Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah.
And I was living in West Virginia when A Little Night Music came out, and I listened to that record over and over. So I have a feeling I imagined this production decades ago.
Oh, how cool.
It was decades before I ever saw it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the connection to the music was my initial in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, Michael directed She Loves Me.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, lovely production of She
Yes.
Loves Me at Writers. And I called him the next morning and said, Michael, I want to do A Little Night Music.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm lucky enough that he went, okay, I'll try and get the rights. And because I think the opportunity was presented to me to do an acoustic, let me say that again, acoustic production, no microphones,
right.
With an absolutely gorgeous, extraordinary five-piece chamber orchestra, and incredible singer actors, and no one had to... I mean, they just had to be in it, didn't they?
Yeah.
In that space.
Yeah.
And that's a play that, you know, that started as a film. So it always felt like such a good idea from the beginning, and I'm happy that it worked out.
So another one of your homes has been Timeline Theater, where I spent
yes,
a lot of time last
yes,
year,
indeed.
And it's a very fertile and supportive artistic environment. I actually would say in my career the most.
Everything you say, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it.
And you and I both have a perspective on that, so I know the due diligence it takes to support
right.
making, you
right.
know, great work on a lean budget. A huge favorite of many gay Chicago theater goers. I mean, Timeline, I think, has kind of had wonderful pieces that have had a connection to the GLBT community, whether it be, of course, History Boys, which put them on the map.
Right.
They've obviously,
right.
you did some Williams with them years before that. But the Julia Child inspired To Match the Art, which you co-wrote and directed, I still have people in my theater series who mention it. You know, when we were walking into Wasteland, because our group went to go see the play last week, and they said, you know, we've seen such great plays here, you know, and many of them were talking about just To Master the Art. What was the idea on this? And is this the first, was that the first play you'd ever written and thought about writing?
Yes.
Yes and yes. And why? So are you a Julia Child avid fan? How did the idea come about?
Well, PJ approached us, and Doug Frew, one of my best friends on earth, is a for real writer, and I hadn't written anything. I mean, you know, he makes his living writing, and,
yes.
and but PJ approached us and said, we'd like to do a Julia Child piece. Well, Julia Child taught both of us, growing up in small towns in West Virginia and Pennsylvania, respectively, she taught us how to cook. That's who taught me how to cook, and encouraged, with millions of others, encouraged me to take a chance, savor, enjoy, don't be boring,
mm-hmm.
and so cooking to me is the only hobby I have. But it's really more than a hobby. I take comfort in it. I take, you know, if I'm stressed out, go to the kitchen. Or if I want to celebrate, go to the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense that they asked us to do this. And, you know, we started doing the research, and if possible, we fell more in love with her. And early on decided that we would each write different strands of it rather than sit in a room together and write.
Yep.
So I took a certain strands within the story. And the first day the first time I actually sat down on the computer and started writing and the characters started talking to each other. I know writers talk about this all the time, but
mm-hmm.
It was just the biggest high I'd ever felt.
Wow.
And I do want to write again. I loved it. I loved the experience of it. And the interesting thing about, we've been such best friends for years, Doug and I, that when we came together with our different strands, ultimately we forgot who wrote what. We would cross-reference each other's scenes without even knowing it.
Yeah. How funny. Why do you think the gays love Julia? Do we love Julia just of everything that you said? Because it's messy and it's adventurous,
yeah,
and she was such a big personality?
I do. I think all of the above. And I think she's an adventurer.
Yeah.
She's, you know, let's cook, let's go, let's do. I think we respond to that.
Yeah.
Because it's the opposite of don't do that or keep that quiet or
mm-hmm.
some of the negative signals we get.
Yeah. Well, a very dear friend of yours, another, because you have, you know, forged so many friendships and artistic connections, as one does over a long amount of time in this community, is Susan Felder. She is also experiencing what it's like to be a first-time playwright in this current world premiere production of Wasteland, which is playing at Timeline. And you are the director of this piece. Tell me, what's the story of Wasteland?
It depends on what you mean by that. The logistics. The story is a young man. Are you asking about the play or about how it happened?
What's the narrative? And then I'll ask you how it happened.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Yeah.
A young man. The play opens and a young man finds himself in a underground prison cell all alone in Southeast Asia in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And someone is thrown into the cell next door. Someone completely, someone not like him in very many ways at all.
Uh-huh.
And during the course of the play, well, very early on, they realize all they have is each other. But they have to fight through what that is, and they have to fight through their differences and their fears and their prejudices and their preconceptions and
they're prisoners of war for a very, very long period of time.
They're both, it's the Vietnam War,
yes.
And they are rather not particularly formalized prisoners of war. They're probably in Cambodia. It's they're under the radar. Mm-hmm. It's highly likely they'll never be found.
Right.
All of which makes it sound like the grimmest play in the history of the world.
I was about to say, it sounds like a real upper for your Friday night, right?
Christmas show, don't you know? Only Timeline would pick that as a Christmas show.
But I gotta say, it's so funny and it's so human. And
it is.
I mean, the night I was there, we were laughing out loud and, you know, and incredibly moved. But but we should say, I mean, I don't know if are you telling people kind of what the... It's not a gimmick. I hate to use that word.
But I think it's okay. It's out now. Go ahead.
Is that, you know, you only, both guys are named Joe, and you only see one of them throughout the whole play. So to think that you're seeing a play with one guy on stage for, you know, an hour and a half or a couple of hours, you think that I can't possibly do that.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half with no intermission. And you think I can't possibly do that. And I was just watching the audience because it's so intimate. And I was watching how people were just leaned forward, you know, through the entire thing. So,
And it's terribly human. I mean,
in
every sense of the word. And a surprisingly beautiful production, I have to give credit to, you know, designers. And those two actors are astonishing.
And they're young and kind of unknown. Well, not really. Yeah. I mean, but Nate.
Nate's just coming into his own, and and Steve has a terrific following. But you know, and you Steve is the one you don't see.
Yeah.
But he has created a character so full of detail and life that, you know, everybody has if you've never met him or seen him and they've deliberately left their pictures out of the program, you get to, you know, paint who this guy is. And it is, I mean, the theatrical experience is extraordinary, I think.
Yeah,
and,
like...
and again, it goes back to this beautiful play that Susan's written.
Yeah, and I mean, and as I said to her, I said, where in the world did you find this play? Because we had drinks afterward. But you know, it's so relevant to today, we may all say, because we're obviously post the big election. I want to talk to you about that a little bit. But, you know, this play really does have a feel from the... you know, from the late 60s, 70s, wherever, whenever, we don't know exactly the year. I don't remember the year. You may have figured out what year Wasteland actually is, but...
It spans 2 years. I believe it's 71 to 73.
Okay. So in the early 70s, you know, it's so interesting that the division between what we would say after just this, you know, just this election, you know, red state, blue state, you know, who these two guys are, these two regular Joes, you know, one, why he... You know, one was one enlisted and one, you know, volunteered, and the division of who they are spiritually and culturally, that, you know, the environments they come from, one from the South, where you and I understand those people, and, you know, and then one from the North, but also this issue of masculinity and sexuality, which I think is extremely interesting. Can you talk about, because things are not said explicitly, but definitely as a gay audience, there is a big flashlight in many various ways shown on the sexuality of one of these soldiers or potential sexuality.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I mean, you know, now that it's up and running, I feel less coy about talking about this, but, one of the characters identifies himself as gay, and I put it that way. I don't know that he's ever had a sexual experience.
Right.
But he is thrown into this prison. He may never get out.
Yeah.
And it, you know, some part of him can't let that die, can't let that go unmarked, I feel. When... Susan gave me this play when she wrote it, and I am the worst friend in the history of the world. I never get around to reading plays the Prince give me, so I apologize right now to everybody. But she did a workshop of it at Loyola, and I came, and I was just mesmerized by it. I thought it was thrilling, and I'm part of the Timeline family, and they were looking for a play for an upcoming play reading, and I said, this is the one. And we did it, and people really responded to it. But
which is also a huge story that they would after you all have a list of plays to see, that you would have such a response from a reading that you're like, we're
and
announcing
it was that
in like
kind of
two
response.
Weeks.
The audience wanted us to do it, and the Timeline members that were there, this is what we need to do.
Right.
And a lot of logistics had to be rearranged to make that possible. But one of the things that Susan and I did a lot of talking about was how this 23-year-old man in the early 70s, now I'm going to give away way too much about my age, but, you know, that was me.
Yeah.
That was me. And I would have been in Vietnam, except my lottery number was so high that there was no way they were going to pick me. And by that time, they were choosing people to go by way of lottery.
Right.
And my number, I mean, I lucked out. But I grew up in a small town in the early 70s and came of age of sexual age about this same time. And I, you know, we had a lot of talks about there's no support system.
Yeah.
I know Stonewall's happened, but that was a blip. That was had nothing to do with
it. And it was happening in New York. That wasn't happening, south
That's
of any Mason-Dixon line. Or...
And I'll never forget a cover, a Life magazine devoted a whole issue to the sad gay life.
Mm.
That was the cover. Mm. And it was all about how gay people are going to end up as prostitutes, drug addicts, or suicides. Truly, it was.
Yeah.
It was very sympathetic.
Yeah.
You know, they thought of themselves as being very sympathetic.
Right.
But, and I hope I'm not imagining this, but what I remember is there was one small story about two men who lived together as a couple, and they looked like anybody, any other guys you might know, and there was a picture of them shaving. And it was burned into my memory that that's possible.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that you know, two guys standing in the mirror shaving, it was something that got me through not being able to talk about it, being able to express myself.
The normalcy of that, just the pedantic
beards together. Yeah, that it wasn't a drug addict, it wasn't a suicide.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I felt like that's what I could bring to this project, that I was the only one in the room remotely alive even at that time, but that could say this is the world of this.
Mm-hmm.
So and I know that, you know, some people complain that it actually comes up too soon, but it's so veiled, it's so oblique.
Yeah, and it's being teased at first. You know, something
that's
being teased becomes a reality. You know, I was teased in high school for potentially being a lesbian. I'd had no lesbian anything, you know? And I remember when I came out to my father said, when we finally were able to sit down and, you know, you kind of get, I mean, I think this plays a great metaphor for like just sitting down and you don't leave, you just have conversations, right? Which is my relationship with my dad and how that grew for me coming out and then, you know, coming to a place now where my dad could run PFLAG in our tiny town, but you know, but it is those kind of conversations. My father saying, do you remember when those kids teased you and you were so upset and you came home from your freshman year of high school? And and I said, yeah. And he goes, was there any? And I said, no. You know, and whether I don't think that made me gay or I mean, I think I'm gay,
right.
You know, I'm just gay
right.
and
right.
we don't have a consciousness. But to me, it's that kind of thing. It's like, well, somebody calls you something and then you're like, no. And then you're like, then time passes and maybe you see clearly what other people can see or you're able to accept something that is within you and you don't know. And I think the plays. This is not an abstract play for those of you listening. You go, it's what it is. What it's about. It's not hard to follow. It's compelling. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's moving.
It's deeply human. And,
yeah.
And what was fun, you know, it was an ongoing part of the process, Susan working on telling that story. And late in the rehearsals, she came up with this idea in that first scene where it sort of, they began to tiptoe into it, that the other character tells about 10 fag jokes in a row.
Yeah.
And you sort of watch how that lands.
Yeah.
And there's a
meta theatrical moment happening that if there are gay people in the audience, how it lands. Because I was there with 70 mostly gay men. So there was like a theatrical moment and a meta theatrical moment happening, you know? It was really intense.
Did they laugh?
They did. You know, you laugh, but then you realize after a while, it's like, okay, that's a lot. That's a lot of jokes. You know what I mean? So it's, you see what the impact, and I think that's a metaphor for the whole play, the impact of time and consistency coming at you.
I mean, I think it's interesting that we've had a lot of younger audiences, and younger audiences just seem to eat it with a spoon, but they laugh at those jokes, which is, I actually take as a kind of a hopeful sign that it doesn't occur to them that those jokes were meant to hurt people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is so compelling to see this play now. And I saw it before the election, but to see it after the election and to see where we are when you talk about seeing the shaving, you know, the picture of the two men shaving or my story with my dad, which my story would have happened in the 80s. So a decade later, you know, and then where we are now, you know, in 2012, where for the first time there's real momentum on a nationwide level
of acceptance and equality. And that's coming from across side, both sides of the party. What happened, the historical things that happened in this past election for GLBT people and voices now that are going to be in the rooms is astounding. And it's historical.
It is astounding. And certainly for that, you know, that 20-year-old in the early 70s, inconceivable to me.
Even to me.
I could not for a second imagine such a thing.
Yeah. It's an exciting time, and Timeline does this wonderful thing. You know, they take a snapshot of history and they somehow show us the thread to where we are today, to that moment. And I definitely think that Wasteland is worth a run, don't walk. It is playing now through December 30th at Timeline Theater. First time playwright Susan Felder has written a beautiful play. The design is gorgeous, and Bill Brown has directed just a stellar production. If you would like tickets or information, visit timelinetheater.com. And as I said, it's running through December 30th, so you have lots of opportunities to see it and definitely take friends. What's next for you, Bill? You always have a lot of irons in the fire. You've just come up a very
busy period. I'm opening tomorrow night at Northwestern University. I'm directing there for the first time. You can't take it with you.
Fantastic.
And then I go into rehearsals next month for Skylight, a beautiful three-person David Hare play at Court Theater.
Oh, wonderful. Is that your first time? That's your first time directing at Court?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we will have to keep our eyes on that and let people know that that's coming up, I guess, in the new year.
It will be in a month.
The rehearsals. Wonderful. Bill, it's been so lovely to have you on. I hope everybody
Thank
will
you
go
for
and experience
me.
Wasteland and continue to follow your career in the years to come.
Thank you. It's great talking to you, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you are donning your gay apparel and you are getting ready to be merry and gay. We get to keep the Yuletide gay. It's the one thing they've let us always maintain as gay, the Yuletide. What is a Yuletide? Anyhow, I hope you all have a wonderful week. I hope you're not still snapping on the tryptophan from the turkey, but I hope you had wonderful Thanksgivings. And folks, we're into December. We really are. It's happening. I hope to see you at Scrooge and Marley. It's a great, great way to get you in the holiday spirit. There is something for everyone in this. You can take any age, gay or straight. And I had friends who saw it in California when it had its first showing last week, and they gave it 2 thumbs up and really, really loved it. So I'm excited because I haven't seen it yet and I'm pregnant in this movie. You should see it because I might be having the Christ child. We never know. I'll talk to y'all next week. Have a good one. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.